And now to the breaking news from late yesterday. Here are all the legal developments on the Trump front. First, I'm going to start with the one that got the least headlines. Duncan Hunter, Republican congressman in Southern California, just indicted on charges of misspending $250,000 in campaign money on personal goods. He's holding a congressional seat that Democrats were already dearly hoping to flip in the upcoming election. That job just got easier for them. Incidentally, he was also the second congressman to endorse Donald Trump's presidential campaign in 2016. The first, Chris Collins of New York, got indicted 2 weeks ago for insider trading. Then there was the jury verdict. Paul Manafort, former campaign manager for Donald Trump, convicted on 8 counts of tax fraud and bank fraud, facing up to 60 years in prison on those charges as he goes into a second trial on separate charges in Washington, D.C., set to begin at the end of this month. Then Donald Trump's one-time personal attorney, Michael Cohen, pled guilty yesterday to 8 counts of tax fraud, bank fraud, and campaign finance violations. One of them, quote, in coordination and at the direction of a candidate for public office. That would be Donald J. Trump. This is concerning the hush money payments made to two people Donald Trump allegedly had sexual relationships with, a Playboy centerfold and an adult film star. Well, joining us to make sense of what all of this means for the presidency and the course of the Mueller probe, we are joined by Ken White, former federal prosecutor, criminal defense attorney, First Amendment litigator at Brown, White & Osborne. Also, does the podcast Make No Law, which explores the history of the First Amendment. Thanks for joining us again.
Good morning.
I wanted to start with the Michael Cohen guilty plea because this was explicitly not a cooperation agreement baked into the plea, but he all but named Donald Trump in the documents that were released yesterday. Who is Michael Cohen to the Mueller probe now?
Well, he's certainly someone that I think Robert Mueller sees could be of use. You're right, there was no explicit cooperation agreement. You know, normally a cooperator who's agreed to help the government in exchange for sentencing consideration gets an agreement, spells out their obligations and what they might get in return. And Mr. Cohen didn't get that. But it's clear that prosecutors were interested in locking him in. As you described, they got him to say under oath on the record that he did what he did, those campaign finance violations, at the direction of individual one, who was unquestionably the president. And that does a couple of things. First of all, it prevents Cohen from changing his mind later and falling on the sword and claiming, yes, I did these things, but Donald Trump had no idea. And second, it really fires a shot across the bow of the administration, lets them know that we have someone here who is speaking out and who's willing to say these things. Robert Mueller has not yet, as far as we know, locked him into an agreement, but Cohen is doing everything he can to signal that he's ready and willing to join such an agreement, and certainly he's demonstrated that he has relevant information.
So then what do you make of the fact that no agreement stands? Does that mean Mueller doesn't think he has much to get from Cohen?
I think it's more that Mueller is careful, much more careful than Cohen or Trump. He doesn't really need to lock Mr. Cohen into an agreement yet. He's got everything he needs from him at the moment. He's gotten him to make a public confession and statement under oath that the president told him to commit a crime. Cohen is now, through his lawyers, talking about how willing he is to testify before Congress or provide other information. And all of this is going to provoke more behavior, more statements from the president and his various people he sends out to talk in his behalf. In the past couple of years, we've seen that that often leads to the president and his people like Rudy Giuliani saying things that are probably against their best interests out of anger or desperation or fear. And so Mueller really gets the best of both worlds. He does not yet saddle himself with a cooperator who has a mixed record of bad judgment, but he gets all the good benefits right now of putting all this in the record and seeing what the administration will do faced with this huge stressor. I think that when it comes time when he might need, for instance, Michael Cohen's grand jury testimony or even Michael Cohen testifying before a congressional committee, then might be the time for some sort of formal cooperation agreement where there will be some sort of promise to make a recommendation for sentencing leniency in exchange for Cohen telling the truth about things.
So explain the significance then of Cohen saying, essentially, the president told me to do this, and essentially accusing Donald Trump of breaking the law.
Well, the significance of it yesterday is that it was gratuitous. It was not necessary to Cohen's plea. So Cohen violated the law just by doing the things he did, even if he did them on his own, without Donald Trump's involvement. And the significance of them having him say that, you know, individual one, a extremely poorly concealed Donald Trump, directed that behavior, and it was at his direction. That was, first of all, locking Cohen in so he can never change his mind and later try to say, oh, the president didn't know. He can't fall on a sword. And also it's demonstrating, really, and I think in a signal to Congress, which is going to make the ultimate political decisions about things like impeachment, that they've got the goods, that they have someone here who has, in the context of a guilty plea, confessed under oath that the president told them to do something illegal. So, I mean, if they can prove against the president that what Cohen said is true, then that's a federal crime by the president of the United States.
Let me walk through the other news developments on the cooperation front, which did not get as much play in the media. This week, former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, who has pled guilty under a cooperation agreement to lying to the FBI in the Russia investigation. He was the subject of a new filing by the Mueller team asking for an extension on sentencing for him. What does that mean, or what can we speculate it means about his cooperation with the probe?
It doesn't necessarily mean anything. When you have someone cooperating with you, with your federal criminal investigation, you want to keep them on the hook as long as possible. As long as there's any possibility that you may want them to testify or provide more information or do anything else as a cooperator, you want to put out their sentence so that they still have the incentive to keep cooperating. And as a defendant, you want to take every opportunity to do anything for the government that you might have to get that much more leniency from the court. So all it really means is that Mueller and Flynn's lawyers agree that it's still possible he might still be of some sort of use. It doesn't mean that he definitely will be. It just means they think there's a possibility.
Separately, in a filing on Monday, the Mueller team said George Papadopoulos, who's also cooperating with the investigation, is not being particularly cooperative. He was either not giving them information that would be useful to them or not giving them information that would be useful to them in time. For instance, to question one professor who's a foreign national while he was in the country. What's going on there?
Well, it's not clear whether it's that they're not happy with him now or that they just think that his cooperation has never been that great. Prosecutors have immense power to shape the sentence someone gets by what type of charge they let them plead to. And so Papadopoulos may have gotten the credit for his cooperation, for coming in and telling the truth eventually, by not so much by what sentencing recommendation he's going to get, but by what they allowed him to plead guilty to. So they may have, in effect, decided to give up more serious charges in exchange for his cooperation and let him plead guilty to the relatively minor charge he took, but then they're not going to give him a lot of sentencing credit for it because they're still miffed that he delayed their ability to talk to these witnesses before they left the country.
We're speaking to Ken White. He's a former federal prosecutor, criminal defense attorney, and now First Amendment litigator. His podcast is Make No Law. So the big picture here, the charges that we're seeing Trump associates get hit with and in some cases go down on, these are white-collar crimes, tax fraud, campaign finance violations, insider trading. I guess the big picture question I have is, in a lot of these cases, it looks like this conduct was going on for years. Is it safe to say most of these people probably would never have been caught, charged, and prosecuted if they had not had the misfortune to become close associates of the president?
That's entirely possible. And that's, again, a reflection of the immense power that federal prosecutors have in the fact that when they start investigating someone, it is not unusual that what ultimately takes that person down is not the subject of the investigation, but something else that prosecutors turn up, or some sort of stupid decisions the person makes during the investigation. So we've seen a number of Trump associates take a fall, not for some underlying bad behavior, but for lying to investigators looking into that behavior. Similarly, we're seeing people now take falls, not for things they did with Trump or on Trump's behalf, or not just that, but for things that came out during the investigation. And that is not at all unusual in federal criminal law, and it's why just being investigated by the feds is so very dangerous. You know, it's not just whether or not they're going to prove what they think they're looking into, but whether they're going to find something else, or whether you're going to do something dumb and lie to them during the investigation.
But of course, we're not just talking about doing dumb things. We are obviously talking about criminal behavior. And so let's turn to former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort, whose guilty verdicts were about the money that he took from the pro-Russia forces in Ukraine for crafting a campaign for them, which he then hid in offshore accounts and then lied about, trying to conceal that money, both so that he wouldn't pay taxes on millions of dollars of income that he had received, but also the implication being that they did not want during the campaign for it to be known that he had received these funds and worked for this political party. So can you talk about first what the decision, the verdict was that came down yesterday on Paul Manafort?
Absolutely. And it was, I think, amazing, historic to see this happening in the way it did, where within minutes you were hearing Michael Cohen say guilty in one federal courtroom and hearing the clerk read guilty verdicts on Manafort in another courtroom. It was like the season finale of an HBO show or something. You might think it was improbably written if it were a show. Manafort, ultimately, the jury found him guilty of some tax evasion and some charges relating to concealing, as you said, his income from acting on behalf of the Ukrainians. And there's no doubt that is part of the narrative of the whole investigation, that we're dealing with the Russia and the Ukraine and what sort of relationships Trump's people had with them and what lengths they would go to conceal that. The jury couldn't reach a verdict about whether or not Manafort was required to disclose some of his accounts. But the important thing to note is that, again, because of how powerful federal prosecutors are, the difference between his conviction on 8 counts and 18 counts doesn't make a big difference for his sentence. He's still going to get tagged with an enormous sentence. He's not a young guy. He probably spends the rest of his life in prison. The significance of this is that it's the first trial for Robert Mueller's team. It's the first time they've shown they can put together a trial and they can convince a jury to convict a Trump associate. And it's a bunch of conduct that's not directly related to the campaign. It's, as you said, not just evading detection. It's not just about lying to investigators, as so many other people have pled guilty to. It's actual underlying bad behavior, tax fraud, and that type of thing. And of course, you have to remember that Manafort still faces the other case in Washington, D.C., another trial relating to his failure to register as a foreign agent, which plays again into that narrative about whether Trump people were hiding their connections, and his lies to the FBI. And there's a case where, once again, it's a story of people making their fortunes much worse by acting stupidly during an investigation, by lying to investigators instead of just shutting up.
So Paul Manafort, by contrast to Michael Cohen, has not signaled any willingness to cooperate with the Mueller probe. He took his charges all the way to trial at great personal expense. He is certainly facing more time than he would have had he copped a guilty plea at the outset. And when I say he clearly has a lot to offer the Mueller probe if he wanted to cooperate, he's one of the people who was in the Trump Tower meeting that correspondence publicized by Donald Trump Jr. indicated was a meeting convened to facilitate the handoff of dirt on Hillary Clinton from the Russian government. What do you read into the fact that he's been fighting so hard that he's basically put himself in a position to spend the rest of his life in prison? Is he still fishing for a presidential pardon?
He may well be, and he may still get it. President Trump, since yesterday, I think, has sent mixed signals on that. He said something yesterday to the effect of, it's a shame this had to happen, which isn't necessarily very encouraging to Manafort. But this morning, he's tweeting things emphasizing that, Manafort, the jury couldn't even reach a verdict on 10 counts, as if that matters, and saying that he thinks he's really a victim and these are old charges based on old facts and that type of thing. So I think it's entirely possible the president could still decide to pardon him. He could even pardon him broadly enough to head off the Washington, D.C. trial, which, of course, would be happening just during the run-up to the midterm elections. And the political calculus of this may be, to some extent, which is worse for the Republicans, a pardon of someone like Manafort that will seem pretty nakedly partisan, or an ongoing additional federal criminal trial involving the president's people in the very days before the next election.
That's the political calculus, but what about the legal calculus? Pardoning someone who is integral to an ongoing federal investigation, couldn't the act of issuing that pardon itself be obstruction of justice?
There's an argument it is, but I think the stronger argument is that the pardon power is so inherent to the president's authority and his constitutional abilities that it can't itself be obstruction of justice. So, but there is a fair amount of dissent among constitutional scholars about this. This is something where you've seen cases across the country where other types of officials have made these arguments. For instance, in Texas, former Governor Rick Perry was accused of obstruction of justice for threatening to use the veto power, which is similarly something the state constitution gave him. And what the court said there was that he couldn't be breaking the law by exercising a power that the state constitution explicitly gave him. So what many scholars believe is that similarly, the president can't be breaking the law by exercising a pardon, something that the constitution expressly allows him to do. But really, that still boils down to a political question, not a legal one. The reason is there's pretty much a consensus that the president can't be indicted while he's in office. That's the Department of Justice policy. It has been since the 70s. Most scholars think that. And so ultimately, the question of whether or not a pardon is an obstruction of justice is going to come down to a question of whether or not a pardon is a high crime or misdemeanor, justifying impeachment. And that's going to be a political question for Congress.
And then in tandem with that is the Cohn decision then. So if the president can't be indicted for the, so what came out in the Cohn decision is the potential that the president directed Cohn to break the law by making these payments in hush money to the two women who the president allegedly had affairs with, and to keep them quiet during the campaign. He can't be indicted for that crime, the potential crime, if it was a crime, while he's a sitting president. Could that rise to an impeachable offense, or is it just part of the calculus that those who are building a case towards impeachment would include within that calculus?
Well, first of all, I think it's absolutely a crime if he directed Cohen to do it. It's a clear violation of federal campaign law. And if he directed someone to do it, he aided, abetted it, and conspired to do it. That's a federal crime. As to whether or not it's a high crime or misdemeanor, well, that's a political question for Congress. And I think it really comes down to naked partisanship. Are there going to be enough people in Congress willing to say that it's something that should be impeachable? I think there is certainly a very credible argument that it is a serious crime. But the question is, are there going to be enough people, blue people rather than red people, who are going to agree with that proposition?
So we're in this very strange situation where Robert Mueller is running an extensive probe, a highly legalistic process whose endpoint is a political vote, not a trial. I guess my question is, like, what's his plan B? If Trump has this pardon power that he can use to keep his most important associates from cooperating with the Mueller probe, to free his most important associates of consequences for their action. Does Mueller have anything in his back pocket, like state-level charges that aren't subject to federal pardon authority?
Well, I don't know that the state-level charges are in his back pocket. He certainly may be ready to hand things off to state authorities. But Robert Mueller has shown a few things. He's shown that he's fairly traditional as a federal prosecutor and that he's very methodical. Federal prosecutors get their power really by doing things slowly, methodically, carefully, and over a long period of time, using a lot of resources that state-level prosecutors generally don't have. So often that culminates in a grand jury indictment or a trial. In this case, it may culminate in a report to Congress. And I think that Mueller is likely using all the techniques and skills he'd normally use to put together an indictment to put together a report to Congress. That report doesn't result in a legal result the way indictment or trial does, but it results in a political situation where, depending on how strong and persuasive a case Mueller can make, depends on whether Congress really feels that they can get away with ignoring it.
And what we now have with the Cohn decision is that Mueller can now say that the president was willing to engage in illegal activity during the campaign in order to win, which is then a stepping stone towards potentially the broader case, which is to say, and that illegal activity was not just limited to paying hush money to people with whom he, women who he wanted to keep quiet, but that illegal activity went even deeper and further into, if Mueller makes this argument, collusion with the Russians in order to win the election. That's the win that he has from the Cohn decision.
Absolutely. It's color and it's evidence of intent. And if you look back at the Clinton impeachment assertions or the Nixon impeachment assertions, there's always a variety of statements. There's the main event, but there's also details and color and things like that. And that's part of what this is. Even if the main event for what the report is to Congress is not this tawdry business. This stuff at least demonstrates, first of all, that the investigation has credibility, that it has results, and it demonstrates that there's real proof of actual criminal intent by the president.
Ken White, thank you so much.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.